Hi, this is Katie Day and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Erica Smith. Erica is a graphic designer based in Hastings, that's in East Sussex on the south coast of England. She has been self-employed for over 20 years, primarily working for community organisations, festivals and small businesses. She also works on her own self-directed projects, including guidebooks and illustrated books, which she sells through her market stall called Source and through selected outlets. Erica has always been active within her community, being involved with community groups, organising parties and events, helping set up an online newspaper, and campaigning about things she thinks are important. Back in the 90s, she created a zine called Girl Frenzy, which celebrated women comic artists and musicians. This summer, she is co-curating an event called From Girl Frenzy to Crone Frenzy. Not sure I like Crone, Erica. Reuniting the artists involved with Girl Frenzy and exploring the joys and tribulations of aging. Oh boy. She loves cycling, running and writing. It's really, really good to speak with you, Erica. We've had a wonderful time before I hit the record button looking at the amazing catalogue of your work. It's just incredible. A joy to be so gifted to create something visual and creative that brings joy to other people. Is it something that you always knew you had that skill growing up?
I always knew I was interested in primarily letter forms. When I was looking through all the things to bring and show you, I found the very first book which I learned to read from, and that had very unusual letter forms in it. And I'm sure that that was one of the things that fascinated me. And all the other little things which go with letters, like asterisks and ampersands. And I love the words and I love the shapes. And so I know that I've always been interested in communication, and I've always loved books and reading, and it is that combination of using the two-dimensional printed form to communicate messages as clearly as possible.
It's really exciting, isn't it? I mean, I know with Kindle and everything that's digital and online now, and people say, oh, books will go and libraries will close and bookshops will close. I don't believe that's true. I think there is nothing like buying and having a brand new book, the smell of it and the feel of it and the crackle of the paper when you first open it. And there's something so exciting about that tactile experience.
Definitely,
of the printed page, isn't
definitely.
It?
Definitely, yeah. I don't mind digital design too, but print is definitely my
print
first love, and turning
yeah.
pages and
yeah.
using different kinds of paper and different kinds of ink and the smell of the ink. You don't get that digitally.
You don't. And I never thought of the shape, actually, of when you say the ampersand and the asterisk and the exclamation mark, and I've never really thought of the shape, but you can have very masculine and feminine shapes, can't you, within letters. And I remember when I was having a rebranding a couple of years ago of the high-heeled leader, I realised how many straight lines there were.
Mm. Mm.
And my brief was, you have to make this feminine because there are so many angles in the high-heeled leader. And what I'm about is about feminine power. So you've got to make this looking soft and curvy somehow. So it is really important, isn't it? The energy behind letters.
Definitely. And in some typefaces, some words will look wonderful and other ones will look dreadful, depending on what letters are in those words.
How many fonts are there?
Oh, far too many. Millions and millions and millions. So many. And I think it's good that more keep being developed. And it is quite interesting because as a graphic designer, you do tend to have your little palette of different typefaces that you like using. And every now and again, I think, well, I better get another contemporary one in. And it's quite interesting to see how type design is changing. Mm. And it does change with fashion, and typefaces go in and out of fashion. But so many that I can't even remember the names of them all now.
It's fascinating. You must talk to my partner, because he absolutely adores fonts. And so get you to, I'll just go out shopping and leave you two gaffing. So what was your first job career? How did you get into doing this? What was the path?
Well, I was at school and everyone said I was very clever, and because I was clever I should go to university. And I really wasn't interested in going to university. So I got, at the time it was called the Ucker Handbook, and I read every single course that was listed in the whole of the handbook. And there was one course that I was interested in, and it was called Typography and Graphic Communication. And wow. It was at the University of Reading. And I think I applied for a couple of behavioural psychology degrees because I thought I should put something else on. But basically, I wanted to do that course, and I had an interview, and they asked me really strange questions like, where does the full stop belong between two sentences? And things that I'd never really thought about before. But it was a good interview. I hadn't even done A-level art, but I had carried on drawing and producing publications, often spoof publications, like ones which were just taking the piss a bit out of girls' magazines and things like that. So it was, I had fun things to take to them, and I think they were just intrigued a bit by me. And I was always aware when I was on that course that having had A-level art or a foundation course would have in many ways been helpful, because I never felt that my drawing ability was up to scratch. But actually the focus of the course was much more about information design and getting images and words to work together. It was a fabulous course. We learned all about the history of letter forms and the history of early printing, and we went on field trips to Rome and Florence.
Oh my gosh.
Germany and the Low Countries. How amazing. It was brilliant, yeah.
Wow. So what happened after the course?
Well, I have worked as a graphic designer ever since then. I did a little bit of work in Reading for a small company there. And then I decided I wanted to move to Brighton. My brother had done a course in Brighton, and I went to visit him. And I just thought, well, what a lovely town. What's stopping me moving here? And for people who don't know Brighton, it's directly down from London on the south coast by the sea. And these days, it's a very cosmopolitan city.
It really is.
When I first went there, it was a little bit shabby around the edges still, but it had a lot of energy, and it was a really interesting place to be in. And at that time, it was really interesting. And I worked for small design agencies and then went self-employed for a little bit of time. And then I worked at both the University of Brighton and at the University of Sussex on their in-house publications. And then 1997, I went self-employed full-time, and I've been self-employed since then.
Gosh. So what is the main source of your work since you've been self-employed?
It varies. A lot of it, I would say, are third sector organisations.
Okay.
So they might be charities, they might have a little bit of central government funding, but they're fairly autonomous, or small local charities. People who used to do newsletters, and actually there's not so much newsletter work these days, but often leaflets, flyers, designing websites, sometimes training manuals and things like that.
Mm. Okay, what's your favourite project been?
Well, I was thinking about it. One of my recent favourite projects was I was asked to produce a book which chronicles the redevelopment of Hastings Pier, because Hastings, again, a small seaside town, and a little bit like Brighton when I first moved there. It's on its way up at the moment, but it's still a bit shabby around the edges. And very sadly, our pier burned down quite a long time ago, about 2010, and it's been a wreck since then, and only this summer it reopened. And I worked with the project manager for the restoration, who was wonderful to work with, because he'd written his story up. He wanted to share the story of the rebuilding, and it's a really important story. And he worked with all these lovely and amazing different tradespeople and skilled people. And he wanted to give them a book to document, to show what they'd done all together. And it has lovely photographs in it, which were taken by a professional photographer called John Cole. And working with the project manager was fabulous, because he was organised, he gave me everything I needed, let me get on with it, and together we told the story.
It is the most amazing story. I can remember when the pier burnt down. I mean, it was such a tragedy. But out of that, it was like Phoenix rising from the ashes, isn't it, Hastings Pier? And it, I think what has touched me most about that story is that it's the local people and the determination, vision and focus of the local people here in Hastings and St Leonard's that were absolutely determined that it was going to live again.
Yeah.
It was the power of the people. I mean, if there's ever a story about the power of the people, it's Hastings Pier, isn't it? It's absolutely incredible.
In fact, with a very different hat on, because I've always been involved with community groups, and around the time that the pier closed, which was a good few years before it burnt down, the council closed it because it was unsafe, and the people who owned the pier at that time were refusing to do any repairs to it. And I, at the time, was chair of my local community group, Castle Ward Forum, which was the town centre community forum. And everyone, of course, was up in arms about the fact that the pier was closed. And I chaired this really big public meeting, which was in the White Rock Theatre. And there was, I don't know, 300 people in that room, and it was a capacity and overflowing. And I had all the local politicians, and I had to keep them in order, and I had to keep the audience in order. And it was interesting because I realised from doing those community groups that I can chair meetings and I'm quite good at it. And what I didn't realise is because I was the one sitting there in the middle of all these people on the panel telling them to be quiet and asking them questions and letting them know when they could speak, all those people in the room saw me, and I am quite a shy person, but I do have a very high public profile in the area, and I always forget that, so that people know me and I don't necessarily know who they are. But that was a great experience, and it was really nice again to be working on the book celebrating the reopening of the pier, remembering that back in that time I'd been there right at the start of trying to get things sorted out.
And a pivotal part of it. I mean, you think of the history of the pier, the Rolling Stones played on the pier, haven't they? And
Jimi Hendrix.
I mean, the history is phenomenal, and to see it open again, it's lifts your spirits. It's amazing.
It links the town together.
It does link
the town
together.
It's quite a long, thin town, and that's a kind of meeting place right in the
middle. It is, isn't it? Yeah, it kind of does bring. It took me, I'm 16 years I've been here, it took me 10 of those 16 years to realise that Hastings and St Leonard's are two different places. That you come from one or you come from the other. Oops.
Definitely, we're very parochial here. And I'm definitely St Leonard's.
I'm definitely not Old Town. St Leonard's. No. Oh boy, no, no, no. And for those in America listening, just come over and visit, and you'll get.
You'll love it.
If you watch Foyle's War, that's where we live. That's actually Hastings Old Town. We live in St Leonard's. What I really want to talk to you about is the girl frenzy. Tell me more about what that is.
Yeah. Well, again, I often have my ideas for things when I'm walking or cycling. And I was walking down my street one day, and this name Girl Frenzy popped into my head. And I thought, that's a really good name. And I thought, perhaps I should form a band. And I thought, well, actually, I have no musical ability, and I really can't sing. And if I did a band called Girl Frenzy, it would last for about 2 performances, and everyone would forget it, and that would probably be a good thing. And that name deserves something a bit better than that. And at the time, I just started reading comics, and I was in my mid-20s, and I'd never really been that interested in the comic format, apart from when I was a kid. And then I started reading these fantastic comics called Love and Rockets by a couple of American blokes called the Hernandez Brothers, and I just fell in love with their drawing. And then I got quite interested about why there were so few women drawing comics, and I thought, well, why don't I do something to change that? And I was also interested in feminism. I didn't really like women's magazines. I found them really tedious and dull and stereotyped. But I didn't particularly like the sort of spare rib line of feminism. It was absolutely there and it had its place. But I wanted something in between. I wanted something a little bit frivolous. And I wanted something which explored more art-related things. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to explore things that I'd found out about and didn't know much about. I got totally fascinated by Valerie Solanas, who you may or may not know. She is famous for attempting to shoot Andy Warhol.
Oh!
And she was quite a bonkers lady, but she did write a fantastic, amazing bit of rhetoric called the Scum Manifesto, which basically suggests that all men should be shot. Ooh, and I don't think she meant meant it seriously, but I thought that some of her dialectic was quite interesting within that. And I also thought it was very interesting that she just wasn't known. And again, it is this thing about famous men get remembered, but famous women, whether they're goodies or baddies, don't get the same kind of public profile. And so that was one little example of things which I thought, well, why don't people talk about her? And various other people, mostly celebrating things and particularly championing comic artists and women who'd never done a comic before but had started, and really promoting new women who were doing new things. So I decided to put out my publication, and it was a time when Margaret Thatcher was still around, and she wanted to bring in what I thought was a very unfair tax called poll tax, which basically meant that everybody had to pay the same amount of money, whether they were rich or poor, whether they were employed or unemployed. And it was a very, very unfair tax, and I knew that I could pay it because I was working, but I thought, I'm not going to pay it. I'll put the money into a bank account and I'll wait till there's enough money in the bank account, and then I'll print my magazine. And that's exactly what I did. And the magazine was really, really popular, and it paid for itself. And so I did another one. And I think I kept the magazine going until poll tax was abolished. And then I did get around to paying my community charge after that. But I do like thinking, if there's something that I don't approve of, I will try and find a creative way of making my feelings felt. And I thought that was a really good thing to do, because it was a very positive protest. And it did mean that I created this, and it was a fantastic fanzine, and we did 6 issues of it. I was primarily the editor. I would always do some drawing in it and quite a lot of the writing, and engage with women from all over the world and publish their work. And after we did 6 publications, I did a millennial, because it was getting to the end of the 90s by then, and I thought, well, why don't we do a book of it? But I met wonderful women through doing Girl Frenzy, and I'd kind of put it on the back burner and forgotten about it. And then I started thinking about it recently, and thinking about the years that have gone on in between, and thought, well, why don't we get back together? So we decided that now we're moving into our perimenopause and menopausal time, we can't really call ourselves girls anymore, so it's Crone Frenzy.
Could you not have come up with a more flattering title? What about Wise Woman Frenzy?
Well, we are wise women, but I guess it is, it's that jokey thing. And one of the things that I would really like to do as part of it is, you know, it is, menopause is still something which isn't talked about
it
very
isn't.
Much.
You're right.
And I was thinking it would be really good to have a hairy chin wag and talk about that too.
Why don't people warn you what's going to happen when the menopause gets? Nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about the fact that you strip your clothes off on the train up to London, much to the consternation of your fellow passengers, because you're suddenly having a hot flush and your memory goes out the window. I'm just praying that it comes back again. Later.
It is. It's a very weird time.
It's a very weird time.
It is a bit like being an adolescent. I sometimes feel like an adolescent boy, and I know that I'm changing, and it is to do with, we are all bags of chemicals, and it's those chemicals rejuggling themselves inside. And it is a shame that you can't talk about it more. So I thought that would be a good reason to reintroduce Girl Frenzy in its more mature form.
It's a brilliant idea. And also what I have realised is that it's the universe playing a really, really bad joke on women, that we just come into our real prime for any time from about 45 to 60. We're usually doing the work that we were really born to do. I've finally have served my apprenticeship at the age of 56 and am now stepping into the work I was born to do. I finally met the man I was meant to be with just as the menopause kicks in. Hurrah! So, energy, libido, passion. You know, I have to kind of get the crank and just wind myself up every morning. I think, hang on, universe, you're having a serious joke here, aren't you? What's going on? Really? You think this was a good idea? So having a magazine that celebrates women going through that phase of life, and it's getting your head around that it's actually, it's just a stage and it's positive.
Yeah, I think it's finding the positive coping mechanisms, yeah. Which is really important through life generally.
Yes.
But I think it's a time that I found the hardest of anything so far. And I don't know how much it's to do with external forces and how much it's to do with internal.
Oh, interesting.
But you have to take a step back and try and work it out.
Yeah. So how is this crone frenzy, she says through gritted teeth, coming together?
We're going to have a big event. There's a festival called Supernormal, which I've never been to Supernormal, but I get the feeling it's not very normal. People I know who've gone just love it. And it's basically, it's you all get in and muck in together and do things. And we just wrote them a proposal and said, we want to have a crone frenzy event. And they said, yeah, great idea, come along. They're giving us a gazebo, we'll run workshops, we'll encourage people to write and draw. We'll do some spoken word readings, which is another thing which came out of Girl Frenzy, is it started off just being the comic. And then I started on putting on bands and writing.
Okay.
And again, getting women who'd never done any writing before to come and do writing and spoken word. And we used to have most brilliant nights. And I must say about Girl Frenzy, it's not exclusively for women. The line on it was always, it's by women for people.
Mm.
And so it was always for kind of girls and the odd boy. We like our odd boys, they like Girl Frenzy. But yeah, we used to do little spoken word nights in Brighton. And then I thought, I really want to go to New York. And then I thought, well, why don't I do a Girl Frenzy tour? So we took Girl Frenzy to New York.
Wow.
And that was great.
How fantastic. Mm. When did you do that?
Ooh, it would have been the year before the Twin Towers came down. So I guess it was 2000. It was September 2000. And we went to New York. We found places to stay with people who liked Girl Frenzy. And we got in touch with local women in New York to get them to perform too. And we performed in places like Blue Stockings, which is a feminist bookshop in Manhattan, and Dumbo, which is an amazing place down under Manhattan Bridge overpass.
Wow.
And had a great time. And it was really lovely to be in New York for a purpose and make connections.
How fantastic. How long were you there?
Only about a week.
Brilliant.
It was a really good thing to do.
Brilliant. Oh, so you're going to take Crone Frenzy back to New York?
That's a good idea.
I think that's a brilliant idea. Yeah. I think you should do a US citywide tour.
Yeah, that would be good. Our other one was No Sleep Till Brooklyn. So I think, going in, total nationwide.
Start off in the East and just gradually work your way over to LA, perhaps. Mm. You could do Chicago. New Orleans would be a good place to go.
Definitely San Francisco.
San Francisco would be brilliant.
So if any of your American listeners want to get in touch.
Absolutely, get in touch with Erica and help her put on her crone stroke girl stroke woman frenzy US tour. You so got to go back to New York though. I mean, it's an absolute minimum.
I love New York.
I do. It's just just a brilliant city, isn't it?
It is a brilliant city. And another thing that I did, as a result of going to New York that first time, I never wanted to go to America. I didn't think I'd like it. And I went to New York and loved it. And then years and years later, when I moved to Hastings, I started running. And again, I'm not a natural runner. If you look at me, I'm more of a pug than a greyhound. But I suddenly started thinking I need exercise. I was working at home and I thought, I've got a nice park down there. Why don't I run around it? And then I heard about the Hastings Half Marathon, which is a 13-mile race around the town. And I thought, how lovely to run around your town. And there was all these bits of it that I'd never been on, like the ridge. I never really understood where the ridge went. And I thought, well, why don't I do that? And I found a little training schedule and I kind of worked up slowly to it. And it was very easy. I was amazed. I'm not a fast runner, but I got round.
Well,
and whilst I was running around Hastings, because it does get a bit boring, I used to pretend I was in New York. And I don't know why. I think it was, we have a lovely park called Alexandra Park. And Alexandra Park and parks of that era in England were influential on the big parks in the States, like Central Park and Prospect Park, which I also love. So I had this little psychogeographic game going on as I ran, and I'd pretend I was in Central Park, and then I'd get down to the seafront where we got two fairground rides and pretend I was at Coney Island. and that
brilliant.
Made me think,
brilliant.
It'd be really nice to run around New York. And all those bridges, I love the bridges there. So I applied to for a place in the New York Marathon.
Wow.
And I didn't really expect to get one because it's a very, very popular race. And I think in the May of that year, which is going back about 7 years now, I got notification that I had a place. And I thought, oops, I better start running again then.
You be careful what you wish for. You'll probably get it.
And that was amazing because I did have to build up to running 20 miles at a time, which was really good because I learned a lot about Hastings and places around Hastings that I'd never been to before. And it was really good for my fitness. When it got to the 20-mile runs, my bottom would have changed shape by the time I came back from the run.
Wow, wow.
So, but running around the New York Marathon was fantastic. I high-fived every small child in New York.
So when did you do that? You did that 2010?
About 7 years ago. So
2009?
Yeah, around roughly? 2009, I think. Yeah.
Gosh, how long did it take you?
Over 5.5 hours. I wasn't fast, but I did get there.
But you did get there.
I didn't do much walking either. I just had a very slow jog, that pace that I did.
But I bet the atmosphere was amazing.
It was brilliant. What I really loved about it, and I hadn't thought about it, is obviously they have to clear all the cars away. I don't know where everybody puts their cars. Maybe no one in New York drives, apart from taxi drivers. But to be running around New York and being able to see everything on the streets, it was just absolutely amazing. And running around Harlem. I love Brooklyn and I loved Harlem. And it was just great to have that opportunity to go on a whistle-stop tour.
Amazing. What an experience. Incredible. How long were you in New York for?
Again, it wasn't very long. Probably about 5 days altogether. Okay. Just long enough to get there and get over the jet lag and do it.
And do it and fly back.
But, yeah.
I've been trying to get back to New York since 1988.
Time you got there.
I've been to Washington and Philadelphia and LA and loads of other places, but I absolutely must get back to New York. I fell in love with it. Amazing city. Yeah, it's very different to the rest of America. There's New York and then there's the States, I think. But I love the sassiness of New Yorkers.
I think they're very friendly too. I think much friendlier
Americans
than
Americans are, actually.
Yes, it's true. We like you, Americans.
We love you, Americans. Yeah, we do.
We're friendly in Hastings, but...
Yeah, we're very friendly. Come over and visit us.
London is not quite the same.
Well, London is such an eclectic mix of the world, isn't it? Which is one of the reasons I love London, is because it's so multicultural. I think that's one of the incredible gifts of the UK. Actually, I think it's an incredible gift, is that we are very multicultural now as a nation, but particularly London. I love getting off the train at Charing Cross and walking out onto the Strand, and just the assault on the senses of the noise and the people and the languages and the cultures, and it's like this heartbeat. I absolutely adore London for its diversity.
Mm. Yes, I agree with you about that. I think it's just everyone's on their own little mission in London.
True.
And they don't give you the time of day.
No. Nope.
Whereas I noticed in New York, if you got out of a subway looking a bit lost, somebody would come and say, can I help you?
True.
And
it's
that was
true.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, I found that actually when I was in LA, assuming that their metro worked the same as London Underground, so that you had to do your ticket both in and out, and not realising you only had to do it in, you didn't have to do it out, and then figuring out why I couldn't get out. And these lovely people coming to my rescue. But Americans are great. Yeah, absolutely great. So what... are you going to be with Chrome Frenzy? You say you're reuniting the artists. Is it all the same artists that were involved in Girl Frenzy? Are you having new artists coming along for
this one? They will all be invited. And certainly a lot of the original women will come along and get involved. But there is a kind of, I guess, a Girl Frenzy ethos. And you meet people along the way who just get Girl Frenzy. And so there will be others too.
So the focus is about this stage in women's lives, or what's going to be the focus of it?
I think it's going to be what the people who are there want to bring to it.
Okay.
But there is going to be quirky crafting, but it's not just about quirky crafting. So we want to have little sewing bees. We're going to have the Vicious Sewing Circle, for example. But we will be talking and reading at the same time as we're sewing. And we will be encouraging people to write and draw their own protest banner, for example, and maybe sew things up. And so a lot of it will be thinking about protest of one kind and another, and again in a very creative way. And I think that it is taking that energy, and maybe an energy where people are feeling a bit fed up about how the world is being run at the moment, but finding a positive way to state what they feel and change things.
There is a very different energy when women have a cause, isn't there, to the way men approach it. It's more subtle. It tends to sometimes be more under the radar. But my feeling is it's more powerful.
I think it is really good if you keep your anger under control. And I think women are better at that. And I'm very aware of it with some of the other funny little campaigns that I do. And one of them is, again, locally in the lovely streets of St. Leonard's, there often is quite a lot of dog muck on the pavements. And there was a time when it was really bad. And I don't think it really helps to shout at people and say, "You're disgusting, pick that up," because they won't anyway. And I just thought, how am I going to find a way of getting this message across? And I used to carry a packet of chalk in my bag. And if there was some dog muck on the pavement, I'd draw a little bag around it, tied up at the top, and I'd write next to it, "Bag it and bin it, spread the word, not the poop."
Nice.
And then if there was a really, really, really big bit of dog muck on the ground, I'd draw an elephant with its tail lifted up and say, "Please clean up after your pet." And I think that really helped, because people would see it and they'd think it was funny. And the person who knew that they had left their dog to do that on the ground would see the chalking the next time they walked up the street. And again, it's like, rather than being some, "You're vile, you're disgusting," it's just like, "Actually, you're a bit stupid, aren't you? Why don't you just pick it up and stop people having to chalk on the pavement?" And it made a huge difference. And the other little campaign I did more recently, entirely differently, was I ended up producing 100,000 beer mats, which were political, about a political party called UKIP, which is the UK Independence Party. And they're an interesting party. What I don't like about them is I think they're extremely intolerant, and it's a soft way for very right-wing bigoted views to get more established. And they used to say ridiculous and offensive things, and actually the party's been cleaned up a bit since then. But my line was, there was my local pub, my favourite pub, and they were going to start having UKIP meetings in there, and that really upset me, and it did basically put me off my beer. So I did a little beer mat that says, "UKIP put me off my beer," and people loved the design and said, "Oh, you really should print some of those up." And we ended up printing 100,000 and distributing in the constituencies where UKIP had quite a strong following. And actually, UKIP didn't do very well in the general election, and I'd like to think that it was down to my beer mats.
Thank the Lord and thank Erica. Yeah.
But again, and I think it is something to do with being a graphic designer, and my business is called Wordsmith, and I do love words, and I think it is that thing about trying to think of a clever way of communicating a message.
Yeah.
And that is the value of graphic design anyway, not just advertising. You use it in other ways.
It is, yeah, it's using it for positive good, isn't it, as well? And it's that I would say, submersive message. It's not really, but it's a subtle underground message, isn't it? Almost subliminal, that kind of gets through, but in a gentle, non-confrontational way.
I think that's
which
it.
Has far more impact, actually. Yeah. Because if you confront people, as you say, you know, with a dog mess, if you confront people immediately, that because they know they're in the wrong, they'll be embarrassed, and rather than admitting it in public, they will attack.
Yep.
It's actually far more effective to do what you did, where they are embarrassed, but they don't have other people witnessing it.
Yes.
But it gives them the opportunity to own what they've done wrong and not do it again in a way that's non-confrontational, which means it's far more likely to stick.
Yeah.
That's a really clever way of doing it.
It is. It's a little bit of subtle humour, and I think women are quite good at that.
We are very good at that. So what was this normal What was it?
Supernormal.
Supernormal. What is it, like a festival, an event? What is it?
It's a festival in Oxfordshire.
Okay.
And it's been going for a few years now. Right. And it's quite small, and I like that. I wouldn't want to go to some big festival like Glastonbury, which is the size of Hastings,
huge.
So it's much more intimate. They have small stages. A lot of the stuff is acoustic. They don't have very much electricity on site. But they let people explore, and they invite people who have put in proposals to... should I say what supernormal is again?
Yeah, so it's not a huge big thing like Glastonbury. It's smaller. So are there kind of different tents, different events going? Is it music or is it not music? Or
it is music.
It's
probably
music.
Slightly more experimental music than the kinds of bands that you get on at Glastonbury. But that's good.
Yeah.
So they've got four stages and they have a lot of art input as well.
Okay.
So different artists will be invited to send in proposals, and if they like the idea of it and they think they're going to work in a festival format, then they'll say, yeah, okay. So you get free tickets and you get a little bit of money to buy materials.
Is it a day? Is it over a weekend?
Every weekend.
What's the footfall? Normal footfall?
Not sure. The small thousands rather than the giant millions.
That's nice though. You can have, I think, a bigger impact with the smaller group, can't you? It's more intimate and...
I really like working at a festival, and I do like even going camping in a big group. That's the special feeling about it, and you get to know the people who are there better, and you're not being passive, you know, you're being part of it, and I think that's really important.
Mm. So when is that?
That's the beginning of August.
Beginning of August. Okay, cool. Fantastic. What's your most exciting project that you're working on right now?
What's my most exciting project at the moment? I've just started working with a new client called Coalition for Efficiency.
Ooh.
And they work with charities looking at how to make the volunteers' experience as good as possible.
Interesting.
So that it's good for both the charity or the small business and for the person who's learning as a volunteer. And I think that's going to lead to some exciting things. And the woman I've been working with on that, also entirely separately, imports beautiful handmade cushions made in Mexico. And so she works with women trades groups who weave, and she will commission different kinds of cushion covers and things like that, and she's bringing them over, and she's asked me to work with her on developing her identity and promoting that more.
How lovely.
So that's an exciting thing.
Yeah, very exciting. The things that you were showing me before we started the interview, and the one that I kind of went doing was the African coconut cooking sauce.
Oh yeah.
Crambora.
Yep, that's right.
I love that branding. I mean, if I saw that in a supermarket or anywhere, or deli, anywhere, I would head straight for it. It's so engaging. And it looks authentic.
Thank you.
So
that's
those
really
kind
nice.
Of projects must be really exciting.
Yeah, and that was really good. And Gertrude, who cooks the Crambora cooking sauces, came to me out of the blue. I think she'd been recommended by another client. But she'd already had some labels designed for her cooking sauce, and she didn't like them. And she couldn't really explain why, but she knew that they weren't doing what she wanted them to.
Mm.
And it was been really good working with Gertrude, because she definitely has a vision. She also cooks really good food, which helps. I've never bought or eaten a cooking sauce before in my life. And she bought me a jar of this, not even with a label on, just in a jar. And I thought, well, I'm designing this. I'm going to have to taste it and see what I think of it. Unfortunately, tasted it and it was absolutely delicious. And I wanted to do something which reflected a flavour of Africa, but wasn't the really, really cliched images of Africa and the cliched fonts and things which were used. So I've used a lot of bright colour, and she's got four different cooking sauces, and they all have a very different strong background colour, and a nice image of an African sunset over a sea.
Mm.
And they're fun and bright, and she also does a really mean chili dipping sauce.
Oh, does she? Oh, yeah. God. She's like, gotta tell me where I can get her stuff from. I'm salivating. It's only, what is it, 10 past 11 in the morning, but oh, wow.
It's really good. We often do stalls together, and we call our stall Sauce, because it's a good name.
It is a good name.
But there's always a little sample of the chili dipping sauce, and so we lure people over by saying, come and try some of our chili sauce. if you think you're hard enough.
Yeah, I bet you get lots of men coming over. They do. I can handle that. Love, give me double doses. Yep. Fantastic. So what's the future for you? Where do you want to take your work? What would be an ideal project that you haven't yet done but you would love to do?
I'd really love to do more work for the tourism industry. And one of the things that I've just been developing with a very long-term old friend of mine has been they're kind of guides to towns, but they have space in them, so you can add to them and you can use them as your own travel journal, but they also work as a basic guide to a town, so there's different bits of information about places to go and cafes and shops and things that you might be interested in and you might not discover otherwise. And I'd love to do more things like that, or work with particular places, like maybe, I don't know, Great Dixter Gardens would be a lovely one to work from, and develop some materials for them to sell in their shops. So that would be a really fun thing to do.
I mean, looking at the Hastings and St Leonard's guide that you showed me, I hadn't seen that before. I guess because I live here, I don't go to the touristy places where I would pick that up. But you know, but as a local, I would like to get a copy of that, because I'm sure there's things in there that even living here, I probably haven't discovered. Because we tend to find our traditional places that we go to and traditional routes that we walk or drive or what have you. And because it's always here, we kind of take it for granted. And I sometimes think being a tourist in your own town is a really good idea.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I really love that. And it was great researching the Hastings and St Leonard's guide. And I will, tiny little confession here, but I think it reflects the way that history and our culture is at the moment. We did a pilot run of the Hastings and St Leonard's guide of about 20, and when I got them back from the printer, I was looking through them, and I chose various interesting characters historically. So we've got Robert Tressel, who wrote a book called Ragged Trousered Philanthropists. So it's a really important socialist documentation from the early 1900s, and he wrote that about Hastings. He was a painter and decorator. And I've got Grey Owl, who was a Hastings schoolboy who moved to Canada and pretended to be an American Indian, and no one knew until he died. And various people like that. Actually, they often are baddies. I've got Titus Oates as well, who got loads of money out of the government for claiming that there was a papal plot to kill the king, and actually he'd invented it all. But as I looked through, and Alan Turing too, but I hadn't put any women in, and I was horrified. I thought, how did I manage to miss that out? And then I think, well, it is to do with historification. Those famous women aren't as celebrated. And then I thought about it. I thought, there are famous women in Hastings, and we had a lot of suffragettes who did quite remarkable things. So suffragettes get back into the guide.
Fantastic. You
know, Marianne North, who is a fantastic painter, gets into the guide.
Yeah.
And a lot of local contemporary women, like Leanne Carroll, who's an amazing jazz singer.
She is incredible.
And we're so lucky that we can get to see her for free in our local wine bar playing the piano.
I know.
When you'd be paying loads of money at Ronnie Scott's to see her.
We're blessed, aren't we, down here? It is the best place in the world to live.
Yeah.
So is America. So don't come over at once. Come over, but just not all at once. We are really, really lucky. I think just going back on what you're saying about the women and how it is portrayed externally by accomplishments, you know, as you were saying, it's the men who do things in history that tend to get remembered more than the women, celebrated whether they did something good or something not so good. One of the women in history that has most inspired me is Rosa Parks, because she tackled segregation in such a gentle, non-confrontational way.
Still
and
very,
very
brave.
Few people know about it. And you're right, it's all through history. We just come from it from a different angle, isn't it? And I guess because most history is written by men, still, probably, we are not portrayed or not remembered in the same way. So good on you for doing it. You are sort of a social historian, aren't you? A feminine social historian.
To an extent.
Yeah,
and
which
I think
is
that's
fantastic.
A good thing.
Good on you, Erica. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. It's been a joy to interview
you. Pleasure. It's been lovely to have a discussion with you.
Fantastic. So you've been listening to Katie Day.
and creating ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women everywhere are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.